McGregor versus Poirier 3 is all set for UFC 264. Every punch, kick, and knockout means so much more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering all customers a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs throughout the week. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. It's the McGregor versus Poirier rubber match. Get in on the action now. Download the DraftKings app and use promo code TBPN for your shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's promo code TBPN to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Welcome to SpursCast, episode 618. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In this episode, Colin and I will answer different off-season questions from Spurs fans. Let's go to get started. Colin, how have you been?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well myself. You know, we have a lot of questions here. I asked on Twitter recently, and actually asked pretty late. It was almost like close to 1 a.m. And I just asked if you have any questions, you know, to send them to us, because there hasn't been a lot of Spurs news this past week since I last recorded. And sure enough, I got like a bunch by the next morning. So thank you all for those of you that did respond. And so we're going to address a lot of these questions here. All right. So before we begin, Colin, with the questions, let's first begin with the latest news concerning the Spurs. Let's first begin with Keldon Johnson. He was named recently to the 2021 USA Select Team. So they're going to be participating in Las Vegas with Team USA from July 6th through 9th. And Keldon, he's going to be coached by Eric Spoelstra of the Miami Heat, and he's going to be going against, in those practices and scrimmages, against his own coach, Coach Pop, for the Spurs and Team USA. And then the other bit of news is that this is actually not really breaking, but it's kind of another report that we've seen here, is that Will Hardy, the current Spurs assistant coach, he's going to be probably joining the Boston Celtics as a lead assistant coach to Ime Udoka, who was a former Spurs coach and player, per the Boston Globe. And there's been other reporting as well. So it's not official yet that Will Hardy is leaving to Boston, but there's numerous reports now that we've seen that this is going to happen pretty soon. Whatever your response was to be, Keldon, I mean, not Keldon, no, Colin, on either Keldon or Will Hardy. Go ahead, take over.
Yes. So quick thoughts on both. First on kind of Keldon Johnson getting this role, I think that's great for him. I think that we've seen players, obviously this is much more limited than the examples I'm about to give, but, you know, like Steph Curry, James Harden having breakout seasons after competing for the Team USA in the FIBA World Cup. I think that, you know, the Spurs are a well-run organization. They've had a good track record of developing talent. Obviously, Greg Popovich is considered one of the greatest coaches of all times. However, I do think that playing in different environments with a different team, under a different coach, I think all of that, just having a different range of experiences, can be really good for anyone in a competitive environment. And, you know, it's not going to be, you know, it's 3 days. Yeah. But I do think that experience is a positive one, where you're playing for a different coach who has a different style of coaching and who does things a little bit differently, but is also a very good coach. And you're playing against some of the best players in the world. I think that can only be a positive experience. You know, I don't want to overstate how much, I guess, 4 days can change someone's career. But I do think that that's only a positive experience for him, just given the circumstance. And then, you know, it's interesting because Will Hardy was kind of the other of the three, like, lead assistants from 2 years ago, and was there last year. And so I think this is really setting it up for, if Pop does retire in the off season, that I'm guessing that Becky Hammon is going to be kind of the natural front runner for the Spurs' next head coaching job, if that were to come.
Okay, yeah. So no, those are some good points there. And you know, just for I don't know if they're actually going to do like a scrimmage where we can actually watch them on TV. The select team going back to Keldon, but I am interested to see, you know, if we get any kind of visual here where Coach Spo puts him in terms of like, because I know like with the Spurs they put him as basically like a four this past season, but I want to see, you know, where does Coach Spo think that he should play, and plus with all the different teammates like you mentioned, you know, he might have a different role here, and then yeah, like this is a really good chance for him to just kind of compete and see what he can do against, you know, Team USA here in some of those scrimmages or practices. And then yeah, just like you mentioned on Coach Hardy, you know, that Spurs could end up having you know, another vacancy here. Now we don't know if they're going to bring someone up from within the organization, or maybe they're gonna have to start looking again for another outside assistant coach if that's going to be one, because it's only, you know, Becky Hammond, Will Hardy, and Mitch Johnson are Coach Pop's three assistants right there on the bench with him. So we'll see if somebody gets promoted or if they hire from outside the organization. So yeah, that's something interesting to watch with this latest news about Will Hardy. All right, so now let's go ahead and jump right into these questions, because we do have a lot of them, and thank you all again for sending them. Colin, we have two categories for these questions. We have more of the open, you know, what I'm calling these open-ended questions, where these are more so like our opinion. You know, there's no definitive kind of research or numbers that we got to really dig up for these kind of questions. And then the second part of our questions, they're going to be more research-based, where there might be some stats thrown involved, some cap projections and things like that. So let's first begin with the open-ended questions, okay? Our first one says, they ask, should the Spurs pursue a dedicated point guard instead of combo guards in order to facilitate a more structured offense? What's your thoughts there?
So I think that kind of one of the things that I've really gotten into recently when I'm looking at team building is kind of the idea of someone who can initiate the offense, someone who can playmake for himself and others. Really, the Spurs have that right now in DeMar DeRozan. And kind of if you just look at the playmaking stats for the most recent season, kind of the only one who is even in that same stratosphere was DeJounte Murray. And he's made huge strides, Murray has, as a playmaker, but you know, he's still definitely not to the level of someone like DeRozan is. So if he leaves, I think bringing in a point guard who is more playmaking for himself and other focused would be really good. I think if DeRozan stays, I think kind of the combo guard, the kind of point guard who can like run the offense, but you know, maybe is good at shooting and defense. You know, Kyle Lowry is probably out of the Spurs reach because he probably wants to go win a championship. But that's kind of the point guard I'm thinking of in that situation. You know, someone who can run the offense, but also is just as good at just being kind of a good, solid defensive point guard and can hit spot up threes. But if DeMar DeRozan does decide to leave, I think getting a playmaker at whatever position is going to be very important. And I think, you know, that the easiest position to find that is generally going to be point guard. So I think that's one of those kind of we'll have to wait and see. Based on what happens with DeRozan. But if DeRozan does leave, I think finding a player who can kind of take on that role as lead playmaker would be very important for the Spurs to have a any sort of functioning offense next year.
Yeah, so for my response from this one, you know, it's tough to answer just because, again, we don't know the situation, what's going to happen with DeRozan this offseason. But I would just say, you know, the Spurs got to figure out who is their best player. And then from there, you kind of build around, you know, would a dedicated kind of point guard be best for that player next to that player? And since we don't know who that best player is right now, if DeRozan leaves, well, then I just think that you still go with, you know, letting Derek and DeJounte kind of share those duties now if DeRozan were to leave. Also, you know, guys like Lonnie Walker, the fourth off the bench, and also Keldon Johnson, kind of just seeing who ends up being like that, you know, that alpha, the player that they go to. And again, there's still free agency, so they can end up signing somebody as well to add to this team or trade for someone. So yeah, I guess from my response, it's more so finding out who's your best player first before, you know, just specifically looking for a dedicated point guard. Our next question is, do you think it's time for the Spurs to go all in on getting a star player, or should they just keep staying conservative in their approach to building a team?
So I think, I really think this is very dependent on the star that's available. You know, like let's say if Bradley Beal requests a trade and the Spurs make a short list of teams that he's okay with going to, you know, I think that we've seen in Washington that while Bradley Beal is a very talented player, maybe he's not one who on his own can lift a team up to a championship contending level. And while the Spurs do have some great pieces that would be like phenomenal rotation players on a championship team if they were surrounded by, like, you know, the right number one and number two, I think they would need more than just one star player on the roster to kind of lift them to a contention level. And so is it the right time? Really depends on who's available. You know, if it is like a Bradley Beal, then maybe that's not quite the right level. If there is a player who you know, Giannis didn't sign his Supermax, and he was like, oh, you know, my favorite coach in the league is Coach Pop. I would really like to go to San Antonio. That would be one that I think that you would consider really pushing the timetable for. But I think it really depends on which quote-unquote star is available. I think that there is something to be said for maybe getting that number two star while you're developing other players, and then maybe seeing if you can get that number one star either through your own development or through another trade or free agency down the road. But that is a little bit risky, just in terms of you don't want to get stuck at the number five or the sixth spot and then never sign that next player, and then all of a sudden your youth movement is kind of over. So I think, as terrible as an answer as it depends is, it really is, it depends on kind of who becomes available and then kind of what the landscape is for. If you are signing, or if you're trading for a player who's really going to be that number two, you have to have an idea for what that number one is going to be. Because if you trade for that number two when you have no idea for what's next, then I think you're signing yourself up for kind of just being a middle rung playoff team with no real way out of that.
Yeah, my response is kind of right there with you too. I feel like more so, you know, kind of waiting and seeing, you know, while still building, you know, very conservatively, just letting these young guys develop into the best players that they can be at the same time. And so if you're going to trade for a star, you know, again, I think it's going to have to be through a trade. I don't think that they're ever going to sign like an all-star, you know, currently in his prime, or like, you know, an all NBA level player through free agency. I think it would have to be through trade. And again, the difficult part is that you have to get a player who's like, you know, wants to, those players, the elite players, they want to win a championship right now. You know, this roster is just not quite built there at that stage just right now. So I would say also, like, looking at a star who's like disgruntled or it's not working out in their situation, but they're still kind of young. And so we're going to talk about a player here in a little bit who we got a lot of questions about. Actually, two players. So I think that they'll kind of answer this question for us a little bit when we get to them. But if not, you know, again, continuing to be a little bit, you know, just more methodical in terms of letting your young guys, DeJounte, you know, Derek White, Poeltl, Lucas Samardzija, all these young players, Devin Vassell, letting them just continue to grow if there's not quite a star just there right now. And again, you know, because, like, you know, even if you trade for one star, that's not really, it might get you a playoff team, yes, but again, we don't know exactly who that player is, and we don't know what, you know, aside from those elite players, we don't know that player is gonna make you a top five team or a top four team that's gonna get you, you know, to the conference finals or anything like that. So again, just kind of waiting and seeing. Our next question is, it seemed like Lonnie Walker IV had some of his better moments and times when DeMar DeRozan was out, and he maybe didn't have to think about deferring as much. Do you think he could step into a playmaker slash scorer role if DeRozan leaves? What's your thoughts there?
You know, I think that there is a difference between a player kind of being able to handle the load while a player is out for, you know, stretches versus kind of being the number one guy for an 82-game season. I think that was kind of the big surprise with kind of the Jeremy Grant experience in Detroit this past year. And even though, like, that was such a great story to start the year, that even kind of tapered off near the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, you know, as kind of cliche as it is, it really is hard to be a number one guy in the NBA night in and night out. And now teams are scouting you, and like, your best move is always going to be well defended by the other team because they know what your best move is. So you have to have your third best move ready to go, or else you're just not going to score on that possession. And it's just really, really hard. And is Lonnie Walker incapable of getting there? No, but I do think that would be a several season adjustment if the Spurs said, hey, we're putting the ball in your hands and you're our number one go-to guy. I do not think that would be a overnight, all of a sudden he can do it thing. You know, absolutely, he might have the ability to get there. It would just be a matter of, you know, next season might be a little bit rough if that's where they decide to go. And I don't honestly think that's where they're going to go. We don't really have a track record of the Spurs doing that, and we don't really have a lot of history of with Lonnie Walker of them maybe feeling like they can just give him the ball and say, go to work. So I think that they're going to try to supplement this team with another playmaker, whether that's someone who can create shots for themselves or for others. If DeMar DeRozan does decide to leave, they have a couple of kind of secondary playmakers on the roster. But I really, you know, think if DeMar leaves, they don't have that primary one. And while I think that there are several players on the roster who could develop into that, I think that that doesn't help much for next season. So I think that they in free agency will be looking for a primary playmaker, and it won't be someone who's currently on the roster if DeRozan does leave.
Okay, yeah, my response there is, you know, even if DeRozan leaves, DeJounte and Derek White are still there. So I don't think, like you said, I don't think he would leap over them and become like the number one playmaker for them. I think either they would still have maybe start or maybe come off the bench, like in what they were doing. They want to hit that aggressive scoring attack from Lonnie off the bench. And he went through a string there during the season where he did good for about a week or two, where he was like really becoming a primary scorer off the bench. But again, I just think with him having still to share the floor with DeJounte and Derek White in different lineups, they're still going to be the primary playmakers over him. And so he kind of has to figure out, you know, unless he like starts showing that he's getting better, like, you know, running pick and roll, executing the half court on his own, then maybe that he starts getting more possessions ahead of them in terms of running the offense. But again, right now I doubt it just because of who else is on the floor with him. But he will have more opportunity for sure to try to become a playmaker, scorer, increased role there if DeRozan leaves. All right, our next question is letting Patty Mills walk good for Devin Vassell and other young players, yes or no? And I do want to mention some salary projections here. So according to Profit X, who we've been working with at Project Spurs, Patty Mills is projected to get about $10.9 million to about $14 million in free agency this coming offseason. I do want to say that Profit X is a dynamic financial and performance index powered by artificial intelligence with front office optics displaying 17 visual and time series models for 480-plus NBA athletes. The Athletics models historical, dynamic, and future performance data to monitor and project insights on contracts, performance, injuries, team fit, development, and potential. You can follow them on Twitter at ProfitXAI and also on Instagram. So, Colin, Patty's projected to get about 10.9 to 14 million in free agency. Do you think it's a good idea if he leaves or he returns? What are your thoughts there?
So I you know, I don't know if Patty staying or returning has a direct influence on Devin Vassell. I think that, you know, if they draft another guard in the draft, who's, you know, NBA ready right off the top. I mean, I guess so. Trey Jones kind of fits mm-hmm. that, right? So there are players who I think could be blocked by Patty Mills if he still was the third guard in the rotation. If he comes back, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think that we talked about this last time I was on. You know, that projection that you just kind of listed is maybe not what I would be super comfortable with, and another team might, you know, and if that's the case, mm-hmm. then there might be a hard question there. But I think that if the Spurs can and Patty can come to an agreement on the room exception, and he's going to be primarily a mentor role, he's going to be kind of a third string guard, but break in case of emergency, if there's injuries, he can kind of just plug and play. You know, he very much did that in the bubble, which mm-hmm. is only 8 games. Who knows if he's willing to do that for a whole season? But I think that if he had that role, that would be a wonderful role for him. I think that he loves the city. I think he loves the organization. And I think that that would be a role that he would find a lot of kind of fulfillment in. But if he decides that, you know, he wants to spend the end of his NBA career like playing and making money, I think that's a very valid choice as well. And if that's the decision he makes, then I think there's probably a better fit for him than the Spurs right now. But I do think that, you know, if he can come to a place where he's willing to accept the room exception and more of a mentor role and kind of a he'll play if there's injuries or if it's a blowout kind of role, then I think that he's a great fit for the team still.
Okay, so yeah, so I'm kind of with you there where I just don't think that he's ready there. I mean, because he had a good season except for, like, you know, toward the end there, the last 2 months when he really just slowed down because he looked like he was just exhausted. But, you know, he was still a very, you know, impactful player at those first, you know, three or 4 months of the season before he really started going downhill with his energy level. So I really feel like that's going to be where he's going to look to see if can a team, you know, add him, whether he's going to get that amount that it looks like he's projected to get out of free agency, or maybe he has to settle for less, maybe like the mid-level exception from a different team, like a playoff type team. So that's something. So I do feel like if he returns, unless he's willing to do that, you know, sacrifice it at a lesser role, which I don't think he is quite there yet in his career, then again, I just think that it's better if he moves on. That way the younger players could get, you know, that more opportunity. And so that's like Trey Jones could be the maybe like the backup, your primary backup point guard, so he can develop. But a big question though for the Spurs though is that, let's just say they do let Patty leave. Well, they have a lot, you know, they have to a lot. They have a lot of responsibility now to fill his gap of losing a lot of 3-point shooting. He was our number one 3-point maker and shot taker for this team. And so again, you know, you're losing a huge chunk of your 3-point offense right there if they let Patty walk. And so they have to use free agency or trades or some way to kind of help replenish that or get the younger guys to develop. So again, even though Patty, it's probably best for the young players if Patty leaves, again, there's a lot of then they're going to have a lot of responsibility to make up for that missing 3-point shooting on this team. All right, our next question is, with the big money pockets now part of Spurs' new ownership, will we see a less conservative approach towards signing expensive players or making trades for pricey talent?
So, you know, this offseason will be interesting just because of the cap flexibility that the Spurs will have, especially if DeRozan leaves. So I think that this offseason could look like, whoa, the Spurs are willing to spend because, you know, they're going to have, you know, $50 million or so in cap space, and they're kind of just going to have to spend. But You know, look, I'm going to be honest. I don't know a lot of the history of kind of the new ownership situation and this deeper pockets. I honestly can't say that I understand that very much. However, if I were an owner, even if I had all of the money in the world, I don't know if I would want to pay the luxury tax for a team that's not, like, at least in the ballpark of competing for a championship. And so I really think that the Spurs have to show that they're kind of in that level before they do. And I think they have a ways to get there. I think that, you know, they maybe have some pieces that look like they can contribute to that kind of run, but they're still kind of a ways away from being at that level. And so for me, I know I wouldn't be comfortable paying the luxury tax no matter how much money I had, unless I had a, you know, like title contender team that I was kind of governing there. So I would say they might become more aggressive in free agency and on the trade market just because of the age of some of their best players, but I don't know if the ownership has anything to do with that.
Exactly. That's my thoughts as well. You know, the only way, again, there's still going to be restrictions, even though they do have $50 million in cap space, they can basically sign players up until that they meet that mark of hitting the salary cap number there. And so, yeah, you might see them sign, you know, they might be one of the teams that signs like two of the best free agents in this class coming up, you know, and that's going to be, that could be a big deal, you know, that the Spurs got these two players. Again, they're not going to be all-star, all-NBA level players most likely, but still, you know, the Spurs were signed one of the, some of the better players that maybe even high contracts. Cause again, if they want to sign one of these restricted free agents, they're going to have to go over what that player is asking for from their own team, because those teams can match. So yeah, we might see that. But again, as far as becoming a luxury tax team, I just don't see that from this team unless they are competing for a title, unless they're right there within, you know, they have that, they really have a shot and they have, you know, an all-star or two on their team already. I just don't see that this ownership would, you know, would want that to happen. And so again, we might see them make some trades for you know, players who make over $30 million salary, if that's the case, or you know, sign players to $20+ million contracts this offseason, only because of the situation that they're in. They can basically afford to right now take in big contracts, and they can also afford to sign players because of the situation they find themselves in, where they're going to have $50 million in cap space. So yeah, I think the approach though still kind of stays the same. All right, our next question is, so this is more so an opinion question, I guess you could say. The question is, which players are on the trading block and which are untouchable? What are your thoughts there?
So I think, again, boring answer, kind of like it depends from a couple questions ago, but the answer to which players are on the block would probably be none, and the answer to which are untouchable would also probably be none. I think the closest the Spurs have to a player who's on the block would be DeMar DeRozan in case of a sign-in trade, but he's not even, you know, under contract for the team, so it's hard to say he's on the block. You know, I think none of the players, I think they're actively trying to trade. If I, you know, I don't have any intel at all, but I just, there's no reason for me to think that any of the young players are trying to go out and make a trade to get rid of them. But also at the same time, if the right deal came around, I don't think they'd be like, oh no, there's no way we can trade this player for superstar X. You know, I don't think there's any player on the block, and I don't think there's any player that they wouldn't be willing to trade for the right deal.
Exactly. So my answer, you know, is just kind of copying you there. It's, you know, there's nobody that's untouchable. I think, like, you know, if there's an all-star out there that's like, you know, it's going to really make this team, you know, leap into the top 10 or I mean, not top 10, but like top five of becoming a better team. I think that, yeah, they would probably trade anyone if that was the case. But again, there's nobody like out there that's right there and that's available right now for that kind of a trade. And then on the block, I just don't see anyone as well. You know, it's just a lot of young players. They're all developing. No one's, you know, an actual all-star right now. You know, maybe later on the road, some of those players can be. I think one player who's interesting to watch, not this summer, but just depending on his contract situation, is Lonnie Walker, because again, the Spurs can extend him this offseason, and if they don't, well then that means that he plays next year on this team, and then he becomes a restricted free agent in next summer. So again, if they maybe think that if they don't sign the extension with Lonnie this offseason, then let's just say that, you know, we start getting to the season for a few months and Lonnie's kind of just not you know, improving as much as from what he was doing last year, well then maybe they try to move him just because, you know, they might lose him over the summer, the next offseason. So again, but right now I just don't think, as of currently, this current offseason, I don't see anyone on the block or anyone as untouchable right now. All right, our last question for the open-ended questions is the plan to stay a 10 seed for this team?
Yeah. I don't think that was ever the plan. You know, I think we have to look at the context of this season. You know, this is a wild season. We're seeing that in the playoffs right now. And it's very cool to see some fan bases who would never be able to experience the finals being able to experience that. You know, it looks like it's going to be absolutely going to be Suns and probably Bucks, maybe Hawks. And that's kind of cool, because those are three fan bases that haven't been able to experience this level of NBA basketball in a long time, if ever. But, you know, looking at the context of the season, you can see it in the playoffs, how injuries have played a part. You know, the Spurs, I think, would have hosted at least one play-in game if it weren't for their COVID bout in the middle of February. You know, that really derailed their season. I think they were on track for doing much better than the 10th seed. And I think if things hadn't gone haywire the way they did, you know, I think a seventh or eighth seed is not out of the possibility. And, you know, there was even options for them to kind of even get up to the sixth seed if things went right for them. And that COVID kind of thing happening for them, the time that it did and the way that it did and kind of really derailing the second half of their season, I think it can't be overstated how much that really affected them. I think that this team, you know, on paper probably looks like a 10 seed to a lot of people, but they were not playing like a 10 seed the first half of the season before the COVID stuff hit them. So I don't think they're really a 10 seed now. You know, I know that the West is always competitive and there's always new teams coming in and changing and all that kind of stuff. And the Warriors could be much more competitive next season. And we have to see with some of these other teams like the Pelicans, but I don't think they were a 10 seed this season. I think that they're trying to compete for the playoffs. Are they a higher level playoff team? I don't think so, but I think that they're trying to get even higher than that. Now, what that looks like this offseason has a lot of different possibilities, but I would say that the plan is no, not to be a 10th seed, and I don't think that was the plan this year either.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, right now is the makeup of the roster, because we don't know what's going to happen with DeRozan or Patty Mills or Rudy Gay or some of their other players. Right now it looks like, you know, right now they're in the, like just with the players that are signed to contracts, it looks like, you know, 10 to like 12 seeded team. But it depends on what happens this offseason. If they re-sign DeRozan, well, then, yeah, maybe they stay right there where they kind of were within like that, like you said, like 6 to 10 ranges where they kind of were before they got, you know, hit with COVID and all the injuries and things like that. Or, you know, maybe they make different moves in the offseason, whether that's trading for a different player, but whether that's, you know, signing different free agents. Well, then that I think leaps you up to like a 6-8 team, a little bit more comfortably to say. So again, it kind of just depends on what moves they make, but I think that at the end of the day, they're always going to be at least have it. If they continue with this play-in game, the NBA, well, then I think they're going to have a chance with just the players that they currently have on the roster to be at least be in that play-in game range. But again, I can't say that they're going to be a top five type of team right now, just because we haven't seen the players that are going to be on this team. All right, now we're going to go to more so some of our research-based questions where I had to, you know, dig up some numbers and things like that. So, you know, before I ask you these questions, or after I ask you these questions, I'll kind of give some background on some of these numbers for these questions. All right, our first question is, does bringing Rudy Gay back make sense? So let's first begin with what is Rudy Gay projected to get out in the market this coming offseason? According to ProfitX, Gay is projected to get $8.9 million at low to about $11.7 million at high in salary this current coming off season in free agency. What are your thoughts on bringing Rudy Gay back?
It really is just so difficult right now, because this offseason is like a choose your own adventure that could go like a million different ways. You know, mm-hmm. It's really hard to know exactly what will happen. I don't, you know, I know that they probably want to give more playing time to Luka Šamanić, but I know that, you know, he's not a bad player to have on the roster. I just don't know if this is a roster that kind of makes great sense for him. You know, I think if he wants to come back and it's at a number that's good for the Spurs, kind of having that bench scorer who can, like, maybe not like, you know, a superstar defender, but who's kind of becoming more and more willing to play the Spurs system over time. Like, I think that can be a valuable player, but is he willing to do that? I think the Spurs would be okay with keeping him. I think the bigger issue is the other way around, where I don't think that, kind of with the way that they're going, that this is the best roster fit for Rudy Gay himself. I think that if he decided that he wanted to move into a different kind of situation, kind of the Wesley Matthews kind of, you know, smaller role on a championship contending team, I think that'd be more than justified. And that kind of seems like the better fit for him at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I just think that for one, you know, I think if you're the Spurs, you got to see what Luka Šamanić can do. You know, he's already coming into his third year now, this coming season, or fourth. Yeah, third. Yeah, because what is it? Third year, maybe second.
Yeah, I think it's the third.
Third year, yeah, because okay. Well, anyway, so you got to see what Luka Šamanić is, because, you know, he really hasn't had any kind of chance of getting playing time. He wasn't able to get playing time like how Devin Vassell was as a rookie this current season. He hasn't been able to get that. Yeah, he came with Lonnie. That's right. Okay, so he hasn't been able to get that kind of playing time like Lonnie either. So because Rudy Gay's kind of been there in his spot, and then, you know, before that, the Spurs have had different bigs. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge, they had Jakob Poeltl, they had a bunch of bigs, Trey Lyles as well. So you got to really see what Luka is, you know, because they're gonna come time too on his contract where then he's gonna be a restricted free agent within a few years here. So. So yeah, I think that would hinder Luka's development, just to at least see what he becomes as a player if you bring Rudy Gay back. And again, I think that with those salary projections, Rudy Gay probably does want to look more so to see, you know, where can he go compete for a title. And so a lot of those playoff level teams are going to be teams that are over the cap, so they're going to have that just basically the mid level exception of like $9 million, or even the room exception if they're like a luxury tax team. And so that's kind of what projects to be Rudy Gay's you know, value out in the free agent market right now. So I think that it's best for him to move on, not only to try to chase a championship, championship and get and try to win a title, but also for the Spurs because they can actually see what Luka Šamanić can turn into. So again, that's where my answer is on that one. All right, our next question is: can the Spurs get Reggie Jackson? I think he's I think he's primed for being a huge number two or number three, or could be a six man of the year winner. What would it cost? Okay, so let's first begin with what would it cost to sign Reggie Jackson, who had a really good postseason with the Clippers recently. So Jackson is projected, according to ProfitX, to get $11.4 million to about $16 million this coming offseason of free agency. So what are your thoughts, Colin, on the Spurs trying to look at adding Reggie Jackson?
So can the Spurs get Reggie Jackson? The answer is absolutely yes. You know, they're going to have the cap space to sign him if they want to. Now, is he a good roster fit for this team? You know, the person who submitted the question said, I think he's primed for being a huge number two or a number three, or it could be like a number one scorer role off the bench. Well, so my question is, okay, let's say he's your number two or your number three, which I actually think if he's your number two or number three, like I do have concerns about the ceiling of that team. But not only that, who's the number one or the number two in these situations? In my head, most of the players that come up are also kind of playing the same position he would play too. There's kind of a weird mix there. Yeah. I think that, you know, he did have a great postseason, and I think that he's going to have a competitive market to kind of get him away from the Clippers this offseason. I don't know if he in particular makes a ton of sense on the Spurs. He had a great like scoring postseason, and I think some of the other kind of like facilitating point guards, if the Spurs were even to sign a point guard, which I don't even know how much sense that makes, I think a more facilitating point guard rather than a scoring point guard kind of makes more sense for the Spurs this offseason.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, I just feel like, you know, he's already, I just looked up his age real quick. He's 31 right now, so he'll be 32 this coming offseason. And again, you kind of want to still see what DeJounte, what Derek White, whoever maybe they draft in this current draft, what those players turn into. So again, I just don't think that, you know, having Reggie Jackson there, even though, yes, you know, the Spurs could easily, you know, sign him to a contract within that range, 11 to about $16 million for him. But again, I just don't, it just depends, again, who's going to be the number one, like you mentioned there. So yeah, I just don't think, you know, even though he's a really good player, had a great breakout season, postseason, I just don't think you still want to see what these younger players can do for you if you're the Spurs. All right, and this next question I really like because it's one that's really good for the offseason here. It's the question is, how do the cap holds work? Why is Marco Bellinelli still there? How do we get rid of the cap holds if we don't sign the players? So I really like this question because I think this is the one that confuses a lot of people, especially when free agency comes up, because cap holds are you know, just a little bit confusing to understand it at first. And but then once you get the hang of them, I think you're going to be fine in seeing why teams keep players' cap holds that are gone, like currently, like Marco Bellinelli. So you know, just referencing this question, you know, the Spurs have multiple cap holds on their books right now. They are an over the cap team, and we do know that Marco Bellinelli, if you see a salary sheet for the Spurs, you are going to see that Bellinelli has what's called a $7.6 million cap hold right now. Even though, yeah, you might ask yourself, he's not even on the Spurs, you know, why is that cap hold there? So Colin, I guess you can try to answer this question first, and if you miss anything here, I'll kind of clean it up. Go ahead and take that one.
Yeah. So basically, a cap hold is kind of the team's right to sign a player to kind of a bird type exception. So you have several types of bird. You have non-bird exception if a player has only been under contract for 1 year with you. You have non-bird is for 1 year, early bird is for two, and full bird is for three. And those are different levels of like how much you can sign a player above their previous contract or just kind of total and go over the cap to sign that player. Well, you know, what if you had, you know, 10 really amazing players under contract, but they all were free agents at the same time, you had bird rights on all of them, and you could just say like, hey, we're going to go out and sign the other five best players in the NBA. Y'all just hold on. We can give you all y'all need with y'all's bird rights, and we can go $100 million over the salary cap, whatever. To kind of counteract that competitive imbalance, players have what's called a cap hold, which is the CBA's kind of best attempt to project what a player would make based on their age and what they made in the previous contract that they had. So those cap holds kind of sit as they do act against the cap, and they kind of work as ways to kind of regulate that so that teams can sign their own free agents with bird rights, but they're not able to use that as a loophole to kind of create these super mega teams. So the reason why Marco Bellinelli has the cap hold is because the Spurs did not need to use cap space last offseason. They did not need to waive his cap hold. And the fact that they still have his cap hold means that if he decided that he didn't want to play overseas anymore, they could sign him using the bird rights that they have on him. I don't know if they have early bird rights or full bird rights on him, just based on how long he played. However, because they're going to go so far under and they're going to sign other players, they are certainly going to waive that cap hold. And also, if he were to come back from overseas and sign with another team, they would also lose that cap hold. So that those are kind of the reasons why a cap hold is there, why it's still there. I think that there are some like situations where teams have been over the cap for like 10 years and they have a player yeah. that's playing overseas right now. I think the Raptors have a player like that. I think Nando Nicola for the Raptors.
Gets tendered a qualifying offer every single offseason.
Yeah, so he has that qualifying offer kind of cap hold type situation. So that can happen if a team is like a really good competitive team. So they play overseas for a long time and the team is just over the cap. Those cap holds can stay for kind of ever. But in this situation with the Spurs going back under the cap and them using cap space this offseason, they're probably going to waive that cap hold pretty quickly.
Yeah, so again, you know, Colin answered that perfectly right there. And I'll just say, you know, again, Marco's not making $7.6 million with the Spurs. All that is, it's his cap hold. So in the event he wants to come back to the team later on in the future, you know, they could use that to sign him to an amount up to that amount, either $7.6 million or less. Well, again, we don't think Bellinelli is going to come back, but again, at least it keeps the Spurs over the cap. So they have access. Again, the thing that it rewards you for staying over the cap, the reason why you want to keep these is because you get more, unless you're opening up at least $10 million in cap space, right? You don't want to release those cap holds, because if you stay over the cap, well then that's going to at least give you access to what's called a non-tax mid-level exception. So again, you have to be over the cap by a certain amount in order to have access to that. If not, if you're less, if you have like, let's say $10 million, like let's say you have like $8 million in room, which is salary cap space, well then that's not a good thing, because then you get an exception that's worth less called the room exception, which is about $5 million. So again, it incentivizes the teams to stay over the cap if they're not crossing more than $10 million in cap space. So again, it doesn't hurt the team. And I'll just say this, you know, the team is not paying, like the ownership, should I say, they're not paying for when they're over the cap and they have Bellinelli's cap hold there, they're not paying, you know, Bellinelli. That doesn't accrue to their actual salary that they're actually paying for the roster. So again, it's just there more so as a placeholder to re-sign your free agents and keep you over the cap. And a great example of a team like this, why this is so impactful, is like the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? We know that they're not a championship level team. They're a rebuilding team right now. If they were to get rid of all their cap holds and their trade exceptions, which is also a version of a cap hold, they would actually be a room team with like almost like $50 million in cap space. But why would you want to have $50 million if you're OKC, unless you're going to sign, you know, unless you're signing someone, which we know no star players are going to go over there because they're a rebuilding team right now. So again, there's a reason why teams keep those cap holds. And like Colin mentioned, you're going to see this word thrown out a lot this summer for the Spurs. It's going to be called renounce. So when you hear the Spurs renounce Marco Bellinelli's cap hold, the Spurs renounce this player's cap hold, that means that now once you renounce a cap hold, you cannot get it back. That's it. You're basically telling the NBA, no, we're done with that player. We're not going to try to sign it back in the future at any moment. And so what that's going to do is it's going to open up your cap space. So again, if the Spurs do want to operate as a team with $50 million in cap space this summer, we're going to see that word thrown around a lot, where the player was renounced again. I'm really glad that question came up, because that's a really good question for the offseason, especially here when free agency begins on August 2nd, because we're going to see words like, you know, cap holds and they renounce this player, or, you know, or they signed this player bird rights. So Colin, you know, you answered that well, and then, you know, I gave some more background there. So yeah, thank you again for that person that sent that question, because that was a really good question, very informative. All right, our next question, this is a two-parter in this question. The question is, which of the following would be a better use of the cap space? Number one, trading Lonnie Walker IV and number 12 for Kevin Love and number 3, or number 2, trading DeMar DeRozan via sign-and-trade for Kristaps Porzingis? And then I also attached another question, because this keeps coming up, this Porzingis question. Trading DeMar DeRozan for Kristaps Porzingis makes sense or not? So, Colin, let's first focus on the first question here. What do you think about trading Lonnie Walker and number 12 for Kevin Love and number 3 to Cleveland?
So out of the two trades, I actually think I would rather prefer that one, not because I'm a huge Kevin Love fan and I think that he's, you know, pretty clearly a negative contract at this point. But I've everything I've heard, and I know that we have draft experts here at Project Spurs that would know kind of the depth of this way better than I do, but everything I've heard is that this is a 5-player draft. And in that spot, 1 through 5 is where you get that player who could become best player on a championship team for you in basically any given draft. It especially 3. I think, you know, people have done studies on this, and like, you know, 1 has the highest chance of developing that kind of championship contending number 1 player, and the number 2 has lesser, and the number 3 has lesser, and kind of as you go, it really starts to fall off. Mm-hmm. And so that number 3 spot really is going to be the best chance that the Spurs got. And, you know, I know that Lonnie has developed quite a bit with the Spurs, and he's still kind of a developing player, but to me, the value of getting the number 3 pick, even if you're taking on a bad contract for now, I just think that's so, so worth that trade. The sign-in trade for Kristaps Porzingis is an interesting fit on the Spurs. His best offensive and defensive position is center, and he's not probably going to be starting as center with Jakob Poeltl on the roster. And then is he finishing every game? Is Jakob Poeltl never closing it? It's just such an interesting fit to me, which I know kind of is answering that second question. But I just, you know, I don't think Kristaps Porzingis would be a bad player on the Spurs roster. However, I just don't think he is quite as clean of a fit as I think people think when a lot of people think, oh, the Spurs need another big, which again, I'm not quite sure if I agree with that. But I don't know if Kristaps Porzingis is the player that makes a ton of sense on the Spurs roster.
Okay, so on that first question about, you know, Lonnie and the 12th pick for Kevin Love at number 3, do you even think Cleveland would do that? I would say no, right, if you're Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that's why I'm so excited about it. Is like, if I'm the Spurs, and I get that call, saying, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Okay. Do that. Okay. I just want to make sure you agree with me. Yeah. So first of all, you know, I would actually take that deal as well if I was a GM. But again, I just don't think, you know, that Cleveland would just take Lonnie and number 12 for the number 3 pick. And you're right. You know, Love does have 2 years left on his deal, $31 million this coming season and then $28.9 million the following season. But again, I just, even though, yes, I would want that trade better just because you get a chance, like at the number 3 pick, like Colin said, you know, you want to get what, the top 5 pick if you really want to start trying to find a star there that's going to develop into a star later on in the future. But again, I just don't think Cleveland would do that trade at this moment. The second question, again, it's an interesting one. So let me just get some background here on how the Porzingis and DeRozan trade would work. So yes, the Spurs would have to sign and trade DeRozan to Dallas to make this work. And we know that, you know, Porzingis does make $31.6 million this coming season. This coming season, he also has a 5% trade kicker, and he also has 2 more years left on his deal. DeRozan is projected to get in that area. So that range, according to Profit X, is DeRozan is projected to get $25.8 million to about $34.9 million this offseason. And so, yeah, you could see the Spurs and Mavs maybe working out a sign and trade. However, you know, should the Spurs get Porzingis, here's something to note from Profit X. You know, if, let's just say Porzingis was entering free agency this coming next offseason. Well, he would only earn about $18.9 million based on what he's, the performance that he's getting. You know, again, he got signed to a max with Dallas, but again, he's not living up to that max. Part of that is because he's playing a more diminished role because he's alongside Luka Doncic, should I say. But again, I just don't know if would only be if the Spurs were going to try to see, is there a all-star level Porzingis with Kristaps Porzingis if we traded for him? If there wasn't a player who wasn't going to progress that much, even as a number one option, I just don't think they should do that kind of move. And again, I didn't even think about the fit part where, yes, he'd probably start at the 4, but you know, he's really better at a 5. But then the Spurs have Jakob Poeltl, who's playing really well as a 5 as well. So I really just, even though, yes, it's interesting on adding Porzingis because he still hasn't quite hit his prime either. I just don't know, again, because of the fit and also just because he hasn't been living up to that contract and performing. But again, if the Spurs were to make any kind of sign and trade for Porzingis with DeRozan involved, it would be because they're banking on they're hoping that Porzingis can really become, you know, that all-star level player that the Mavericks had hoped, that the Knicks had hoped that he would become. But again, right now, just based on what he's been doing these last 2 seasons, it doesn't look like that player's quite there right now. So again, that's an interesting question. All right, our next question is, who can take over the offensive load if DeMar DeRozan leaves this summer? And just give you some background, you know, in terms of usage from last season, it was DeRozan number one, of course, like we mentioned. Then it was DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Lonnie Walker IV, Keldon Johnson, Lucas Simonic, Trey Jones, Drew Eubanks, Devin Vassell, and Jakob Poeltl. And I only listed Spurs who are right now on contract. I didn't list like Patty Mills and Rudy Gay in there. So Colin, what do you think about if you kind of answered this earlier with your saying that they need to look for a playmaker, but what are your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with this too, is, you know, I think they have some players who kind of with different scoring abilities can maybe replace the individual scoring load. But I think, you know, to me, I just look at Murray and White and I see them as like really good secondary playmakers, but maybe kind of like average or maybe a little bit below average primary playmakers. And I don't think that they have anyone on the roster right now who can take that load. I think there are players who can cover the scoring load just fine, but the playmaking load, I think that would be just a giant hole on this roster if they don't address it in the offseason and DeRozan leaves, which kind of going back to the Kristaps Porzingis thing, you're not really addressing that with that trade. And I think that you'd really need to address that in the offseason. So I think that, you know, Murray and White and Lonnie and Keldon all can kind of replace the scoring. And then kind of the younger players like Luka and Jones developing and Vassell developing kind of more and more and more. And then I think, you know, it seems like every season we get a quote from Pop about how he feels like Jakob Poeltl should be the scoring champion in the NBA or something. He every season he kind of throws one out there that's just like, oh, Poeltl could be scoring a lot more if he wanted to. and so I think that there are players who could be scoring more and kind of replace that scoring load, but the distribution load, the playmaking for others, I don't see that on this roster right now.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm with you. I just feel like, you know, if DeRozan leaves, well, then it's going to be really tough for them. They're going to have to share the scoring with the young guys. I think the primary guy who would become that playmaker toward the, you know, the last 5 minutes of a close game is going to be Derek White, just because it kind of that's been the player aside from DeRozan, who's historically done that for this team. But again, I doing that the whole season, I just don't know, you know, exactly, you know, I really feel like a team would scheme well against these players. So again, it's be interesting to watch exactly who they add to this team, with whether it's through free agency or through a trade, if DeRozan again decides to leave. So this is a really good question, you know, especially with, you know, who would be who's going to carry this team and become that number one playmaker if DeRozan does leave. All right, our last question, and this is a pretty good one too, is thoughts on Ben Simmons. So again, when you just hear some of the stuff about Ben Simmons on paper, you know, it's like, wow, like this is like the chance if the Spurs were to trade for him, you know, Spurs to get a top five, not a top five, but you know, a top NBA all-star at the current moment. But then of course we go back to the tape of what just happened recently a few weeks ago when Philly got knocked out of the playoffs. We saw that, you know, when it comes to crunch time in the playoffs, you know, it's really tough for a team to have him on the floor because he just completely won't shoot. He struggles at the free throw line, you know, just basically just like it's like 4-on-5 on offense when it comes down to the best moments, the most critical moments of a season. So let's go through some background on Simmons. We know that he's earning $33 million this coming season. Then he's also on his on his max deal, so he's going to earn he's going to be guaranteed for a contract for the next three seasons, so you get him for about four seasons here. He is a current three-time all-star. He's a two-time all-defense first teamer. He's also a one-time all NBA player. So again, on paper, this dude has, like, you know, he's one of the best players if the Spurs were trying to trade for that they could get, who's reached all these kind of criteria. We know that, you know, he's going to be 25 this month, so he's still very young. He averaged 14 points last year, 7 rebounds, about 7 assists, 1.6 steals, 3 turnovers. He's really good at getting to the paint, creating for others, and also getting to the free throw line. And then he's also an elite defender. As we know, you know, of course, shooting is his biggest weakness, both on the floor and also at the free throw line. So what are your thoughts on the Spurs looking at getting Ben Simmons?
I think he would be a great fit for the Spurs, especially if DeMar DeRozan leaves. So I was kind of doing like a little bit of a compare and contrast of DeMar DeRozan and Ben Simmons in my head. Both of them have that ability to playmake for others. I think that he absolutely could be that primary playmaker that I'm talking about. You know, him creating his own shot in the same way that DeMar DeRozan can, obviously DeRozan is much better at that. However, he's also an amazing perimeter defender and can even defend bigs as well, which is something yep. that DeRozan doesn't have. So there's kind of trade-offs to both. And the Spurs do have other players on the roster who can kind of get to their shots when they need to. So I think the ability to get like a high-level perimeter defender who can also defend at other positions, plus kind of making up that primary kind of playmaker role, I think that is just so good for this team. I think that he could start like what we talked about with Porzingis, except it just makes way more sense to me, where he starts at the four, and if the other team goes small, he can all of a sudden be your small ball center. And you don't have, like, in Philadelphia right now, if you do that, all of a sudden you're taking out your MVP candidate from the game.
Yeah.
But in San Antonio, if you do that, it just makes so much more sense. And I think that if you could surround him with four players who are capable of spot-up shooters and he's the center, I think that could be, like, a really good offensive team too, especially if those other players are defenders. So I think he could potentially be a great fit on the Spurs. Now, what they would really need to do in free agency is to, like, sign every shooter who would even answer the phone, just because yeah. I think that their shooting is kind of so, I mean, like, at that point, I think you do consider bringing back Patty Mills, just because you need just a ton of shooting to make that work on the roster. But I think that if they can get that shooting in free agency, I actually think they could make this work better than the 76ers have.
So I would actually say yes to, just because, again, you know, he's basically that foundational piece that you can start building a team around. You know, we go back to that first question of, you know, do the Spurs need like a traditional point guard or whatever it was. It's like, at least you found out who your best player is. And, you know, as I said, he's a current all-star right now, three-time all-star. He's an all-level defender as well. You know, two-time defensive player, all defender team. So again, he would be he would at least be your foundation. So from there, you can start building around him. And like you mentioned, Colin, you start looking for 3-point shooting in all these different areas. So at least he's your starting point. Because again, right now at the current team they have, they don't exactly know who's their best player right now, and who's going to turn into an all-star one day if any of those players can. And right now, based on what these players have done, it doesn't look like it just right now. So again, at least you have a player who you're starting off with, and you can start building around him, building a roster around him, and then you can start, you know, from that point on, building a team around him, and then also looking for his number two down the line. So again, here's the tricky part, though. You know, how would this even happen? I just don't, from my perspective, unless Philly wanted DeRozan, I just don't see anybody else that they would say yes to for a deal. Now, here's the reason why. So who would Philly want is the question. You know, there was a report on Friday, just today, that you and I are recording this on Friday, that apparently the Sixers turned down a call from the Indiana Pacers, where they were offering a first-round pick and Malcolm Brogdon for Simmons. And then I know that there's also reporting that Philly wants at least an all-star level player in return for Ben Simmons if they were to try to trade him. So that's the question. Do the Spurs even have the player to trade for him? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think if the Spurs do make a trade for Simmons, I think that Spurs fans will be upset, because I think that the trade they would have to make is going to look like they gave up too much. Like, I think that's the only way they could bring Simmons in. And now, if I'm the Spurs front office, the one young player I would be really hesitant to lose in a Simmons deal, because I think he'd fit well with Simmons, is Devin Vassell. And the number one player I would want, if I was the 76ers front office, in terms of all their young players, in terms of someone who would fit really well with Joel Embiid, is Devin Vassell. So I think that's a really hard question you have to ask yourself, is would you be willing to give up Devin Vassell in this trade? Because then you need even more shooting in free agency. I think, you know, if they are interested in DeMar DeRozan, maybe a sign-in trade with DeMar DeRozan, Devin Vassell, and then draft capital. And at that point, Spurs fans are probably like, whoa, that's way too much for this player. And that might not even be enough for the 76ers. So that it would have to be an overpay to get it done. I think there are probably paths for the Spurs to do it, but it's going to look like it is going to cost a ton for them to do it.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if they didn't want DeRozan, well, that makes it even tougher. And so I just feel like, yes, Devin was one of the players I think they would want. Maybe even DeJounte, to bring back some defense, since you're losing an all-level defender with Ben Simmons. What DeJounte, we know, is one of the better defenders in this league, especially that he was a second-team all-defender of just a few years ago. Even someone like they might even want someone like Derek White, just because of the playmaking that White brings. Sure, he's not an all-star, but at least, you know, he's one of those players who can play in the half court, can shoot, can play good defense. So really, again, I just don't know if that's even enough for the Sixers, you know, if those are the players, because again, we saw that they already turned down the Brogdon in the first deal, and plus again, they're saying that they want to they want at least an all-star level player in return. And so I know that we've seen from the Portland side, we've seen the CJ McCollum rumors in there as well, that maybe the Sixers should trade Simmons for McCollum. And we know McCollum's way more high level scorer compared to a lot of the Spurs guards that we're talking about here. So again, I think it's interesting. If the Spurs could figure out a way to get Simmons, I would say yes, because again, I think that he brings you, he's that foundational piece that you can start building a team around, whereas right now, you know, there's a lot of developing young players, but there's not quite that all-star on this team. And this is your chance right now to get a young all-star, a player who's still, again, only going to be 25 this current month. So Colin, even though this wasn't kind of on our list here, I have a question for you now, because you kind of changed my approach here with some of your comments today. So I've been targeting in free agency for the Spurs, I've been looking at a lot of, you know, outside shooters or defensive players as a big. Now, you've been telling me a lot about playmakers at DeRozan leaves. So I know that Simmons is the player that's the most obvious, because again, he might be available right now, and he's young and things like that. But who are some? Do you have any other players in mind that maybe you've been thinking about if DeRozan leaves for to become like that playmaker for this team?
Oh man, so I have a couple of answers that do not sound very appealing, because they are like way on the wrong side of the age curve. And outside of that, it's just hard to find it, because it's kind of a shallow free agent class.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if I were these players, I would not want to come to the Spurs. And they are way older than the Spurs young core, so they are not good fits in that capacity. Okay. However, your Lowry's and your Mike Conley's make a lot of sense from a culture perspective and that playmaking perspective. And if the Spurs kind of double down on re-signing DeRozan and could somehow bring Lowry in, you kind of get those two together again, and you're probably trying way too hard to be competitive now at the expense of youth. But it's hard in this offseason, and I actually think that makes it maybe more likely for DeRozan to come back, even if it's just maybe like a one plus one, you know.
Yeah.
Because this free agent class was looking to be awesome, and then all of the extensions happened last offseason, and I think that might be kind of, you know, ushering in a new era of NBA kind of contracts, or these extensions becoming way more popular. So I think you know, even future off-season classes that look good, like, oh, 2022 could be an awesome. Well, it might not be by the time October, you know, 31st rolls around. So I think there aren't really all that many great options out there. And so my idea then, you know, and I really need to sit down and look at exactly all who's available, but kind of players who fit this team, it would be re-sign DeMar DeRozan. Now you have that primary score, and then turn your focus to three-point shooters and defenders, because if he leaves, then you do have that hole, and I'm not quite sure how you make that up.
Okay, so that's interesting. So yeah, I mean, I've been there down that road too. It's like, if he leaves, who are the all-star level players, or you know, those really good players like Lowry, Conley, Kawhi Leonard? Of course, we know he's not coming. So for, in my opinion, I just don't think that any of those players, like you mentioned, they would want to come to San Antonio, because you know they're not quite, they're all those players looking to try to win a ring at this point, and they're not wanting to come to a young team. So yeah, I really feel like, man, it's going to be tough for them, because if DeRozan does leave, that's their best chance of getting, I think, a playmaker, unless they can trade for someone. That's the reason why I think Ben Simmons is so intriguing, because you know, he right now he's in a situation where they might look at moving him, you know. And so again, you know, I think that the Spurs, I think that if he's available, I really feel like San Antonio's, yeah, for sure, they're gonna try to call Philly and see what they can do, because I feel like that's the best player right now if you want a playmaker. Now let's just say DeRozan leaves, I mean, and then I mean my mindset has still been that they're just gonna kind of fill in some holes, like we mentioned, three-point shooters and maybe the defenders. But again, I really feel like next season's gonna be a tough season, because they might just want to see what these young players can grow into. DeJounte Murray, Derek White, some of these other players, and Lonnie Walker as well. So again, I think this is a really interesting offseason because of the situation. So again, I think you're right, Colin, that if we see that, yes, they either work on an extension with DeRozan before free agency, or they just re-sign him in free agency, well then yeah, that's a really big hint that they probably didn't see anybody else out there that could match his playmaking, and they were really going to suffer without him being on the team. So I think that's something really interesting to watch. Okay, cool. So yeah, so that was thank you again to all of you who sent in those questions. Those were really good, just kind of to see where everyone's mindset is at in this off season. And again, like, we see some players that the fans want to know about. You know, Kristaps Porzingis is somebody to watch, Ben Simmons as well. So that's something to watch. Don't forget to visit ProjectSpurs.com. You know, Benjamin Bornstein's getting ready for the draft that's coming up this month on July 29th with his latest San Antonio Spurs prospect watch is over Jericho Sims. Again, that's by Ben. He writes those every week. We also have the I've been writing these pieces on the Spurs free agent. So my first one is on DeMar DeRozan. Next week I'll have one on Rudy Gay, and then you know, every week I'll be adding a new player, so then Patty Mills, Trey Lyles, etc. Then we also have the 2021 Project Spurs draft prospects board, so make sure you check that out. That's being updated every week to see the latest on you know, where players are projected to go in the draft for the Spurs at 12 and 41. Thanks again to Colin for joining me here on the Spurscast, and to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.